On this day, on the 6th of January 2001, after a draw with lower league Notts County in the FA Cup, more than 400 supporters staged a sit-down protest against the club proposed move to that place. "It's becoming a mental thing," substitute Gareth Ainsworth said as he tried to explain the team's poor home form. "Selhurst is not our proper home. Plough Lane used to be a fortress for the club, but this place lacks the atmosphere." Well, Plough Lane was kind of a fortress, but it does have a great atmosphere. And Notts County are still a lower league side. So, things aren't all that bad with the same old Wobbles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go on.
Hello, dear listener. Welcome, welcome to a new year and a new podcast, but the same old shenanigans. My name's Matt Cooper and I'm joined by my friend Niall Cooper. Hello, Niall. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Hello, Matty.
Good, good. And joined with the man with all the buttons, our Professor Dr. Ali G lookalike, Adam Proctor. Adam, what are you wearing?
I'm wearing a purple hat. I've got my Tom Ford glasses on because I've been off working from home today because I haven't been feeling too great. And I'm wearing, I don't know what they call these things, it's not
lime
onesie,
green.
It's
that's what it is, Adam. It's lime green.
It's a
green.
Big lime green woolly hooded thing that keeps me warm.
Honestly,
I'm trying to stop get this cold getting worse.
I think we're going to have to take a picture, Adam, of this, which we can put up so people can see what we mean. Anyhow, and finally to welcome our man with all the football knowledge, the football guru, whose head actually doesn't actually fit on my screen. That's how tall he is. Hello to Mark. How are you doing?
I'm just trying to, the lighting in this room isn't very good. Good evening, good evening. I was fine, and then I made a foolish decision to go to Wickham.
Yeah.
I probably have to start with an apology.
Is it your fault? Were you in charge of substitutions?
I was not in charge of substitutions. I think I was actually unfair on the team at the time on the day, because I genuinely think, we can come on to it talking about Wickham, but we should talk about the other games first. I genuinely don't know that we have the personnel to play with the back four, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, well, we'll mix it all in, chaps. So I think we've worked out that we had our end of season special last week. So thanks to
end
anyone.
End of year, not end of
end
season.
End of year. End of year. Feels like the end of the season. Our end of year review last week. Thanks to all those who listened in and shared it. And to Mark Thomas, who actually shared a link round. And as a result, I think we've got at least two other listeners. And actually, before we go to the games, Adam, you had some stats for us. Come on, my friend. How well are we doing? What's our reach?
It's our reach. Well, so the thing with podcast stats is, one, we're not that interested in them. And two, they're quite complicated to figure out because you obviously have the website and then you have Apple and then you have Spotify. So it really depends on how people do it. And I know that there is at least one of our listener who literally downloads the file from the website, does something to it so they can listen to it in a very interesting way, and often will complain that I've got things wrong, which is fine. I like to get good feedback. Anyway, so it's a bit tricky to figure things out, but we've definitely got more than one listener. I figured that out. And the other... the
is
other
it four? Is it just us four?
It might be.
It's more than four.
Yeah, it's more than four. It's less than 1,000. It's what I can kind of guess from what I can see.
Excellent.
We get loads of things. You get lots of streams. There's lots of streams, but that might be someone listening to it twice. And the listeners only kind of get counted. Yeah. I know. And the listeners only get counted if they're like unique and they've played it for like more than a minute. But then anyway. But the cool thing was that it also does stats on location of people. Now,
uh-huh.
I Obviously, you could use a VPN, which could change your location, but I don't believe that's what's happening. Why would you use a VPN?
You never do that, Adam.
No, exactly. Exactly, Adam. That's not the sort of thing you'd do.
Exactly. So currently, we are big in Spain, and we're even bigger in India.
Of course.
That is, for me,
the question, though, worldwide. For the listeners old enough to remember obscure 1980s pop groups, are we big in Japan?
Not yet. That didn't appear.
That's our next market, Mark.
Yeah. If you are the Indian listener, then even if you're just there on holiday, then please let us know, and we'd love to have you as a guest on the pod.
Yeah, definitely. If you're a legit person who lives in India and listens to the pod and wants to come on, yeah.
Even if you're a fake Indian listener and for some reason had a VPN there, let us know.
Yeah, because feels like going above and beyond.
No, that's true. That's true. The cool thing is that also it shows you on Spotify. It's called Spotify Unwrapped. So anyone who does a podcast, they can get access to this stuff. Is that it shows you like what your kind of top listeners are listening to. So the cool thing is like we're in the kind of top. The group of people who listen to us obviously listen to all of the Wimbledon podcasts. That's what it showed. And a cut and nothing else, pretty much, from what I could tell. But according to the stats, our one is the one that people listen to more of. So, you know, well, in terms of like the...
They listen to us longer. That's what
longer,
you're saying.
Sorry, yes.
We like our content is more engaging.
This episode won't be, but yeah, normally it is.
We are the most engaging Wimbledon podcast.
It's either that or ours is the longest. Ours is the longest podcast.
Yeah.
Something like that.
We're the most engaging.
Somebody did was obviously looking for some FC Wimbledon related content and put something on Spotify. X over Christmas New Year. At which point I just retweeted the New Year end of year episode. Because he needed something to cheer up. And he said, thank you very much. So there you go. Aww. Maybe we gained an extra listener. Who knows?
I think from what I can tell, there is quite a few people out there listening to us. And often they feedback, actually, and they just tell us they're listening. So actually, yeah, we are.
Obviously, now once we publish the photograph that Niall's just sent around the group of Adam's hat and lime green top and my torso. Without my head even being there, then that's it. We'll scare people away.
Yeah,
a bit like our defence at Wickham.
Oh dear me! Anyhow, I thought we'd start with something a little bit more fun and positive for us, and then so the point is we haven't actually recorded an episode since the Stevenage game on Boxing Day. So we've had Stevenage, which was 0-0. Exeter lost 1-0, which was very infuriating. Orient, an amazing surprise victory, and then Wickham. So the question is, what is going on? Because it does feel like he's always been stuck on this sort of like 3-5-2 thing, JJ. And now it felt like at Orient and Wickham, the system changed to almost a 4-4-2. Mark, what's your take on it all?
I think we actually changed it at some point during the Exeter game. But I think there was so much frustration from the fans, including myself at the time, because of their belief, mistaken, my personal, also mistaken belief, that Omar's goal, in inverted commas, should have been allowed. Unfortunately, it was one of those classic, very easy to disallow goals because Omar did. Very gently, but he did push the defender.
Yeah.
So no one really necessarily noticed, but we did actually change to a diamond formation in midfield with Maycock pushing up just behind the strikers, Reeves being quite deep, and a back four. But this is why I sort of quickly touched on in my introduction. I don't know how many games Augs has played for us, but I'd be interested to know, and there's loads of stat people out there we know, and their stats are amazing. And I'll quote a few of them later on from things I've seen on social media. But I'd be fascinated to know, of all the games that Olgs has played for us, how many have actually been at right-back? Because he came through as a right-back, as far as I'm aware, through the academy. And then obviously the vast majority of the last 2.5-3 seasons, we played 3-5-2. And he's played the right side of the 3-5-2. Now, I'm not going to pretend to be any kind of football tactician. But what you need to do in the back three, where you play on the field, what your heat map would be, the type of passes that are expected of you. Far different.
Stop, Mark. Right. You just said And no way am I going to be one person who claims to be a football tactician. And then you waffle on about football tactics.
One
You're
sentence.
A complete, you're lying out.
No.
Mark,
I
you're
think
on the podcast because, as Matt says at the intro, and now our football, like, stats tactical guru, Mark, that's your job. So you own it, Mark. That's
okay, so
it.
Actually, you're telling
it.
Me off for you're telling me off for doing
but
what
doing
I'm
the right
to
thing.
Do. Right, thank you.
I'm telling you off for not owning it. Own it, Mark. You
okay.
are our football tactician knowledge. No. If I came on and started waffling all this, all of you, all the rest of the people on the podcast have a legitimate reason to say, Niall, you don't know what you're talking about, because I don't know what I'm talking about. Mark, we look to you
as
for
you
our
demonstrate every
guidance,
week.
Mark.
Okay, so really simple. Really simple. If you play box to box midfield for as in a diamond, that is one midfield player close to the strikers, one midfield player much closer to the defenders, and theoretically two midfield players pushing wider, which in itself, to me, and this was evidenced at Wickham, leaves a rather large gap between attacking midfield player and defensive midfield player. And what we tried to do, by the sound of it, we did this successfully at Orient. A number of people commented after the Orient game on the BBC comments page that this was only because Orient were absolutely shit. And obviously we were basking in the glory of winning 3-1, and therefore we didn't really pay much attention to that. However, I feel they may well have been right. Because if you play that narrow diamond, your fullbacks, in this case obviously Seddon on the left, Oggs on the right, need to push up forward and need to be confident on the ball, need to be confident with their crossing. We know Seddon's been our best player all season, and we know he's been doing that with the confidence that even if he's lost the ball while he's been bombing forward and he's on the edge of the opposition's 18-yard box, there is a left-sided centre-back, i.e. Johnson, who can cover for him defensively. And Johnson can do that by moving across, because there'll be a central centre-back, either Short Shorts or Bauer, who will be covering in the middle. When you've only got a back four, that gets stretched and pulled apart. And if you actually analyse, and Wickham have done it very nicely, because their second goal was a very good goal, in terms of the turn out of midfield and the run that the right back made, which none of our players covered, mainly because we just made four substitutions and this was like 60 seconds later. We, with that back four, weren't sure who was picking up whom. So the worst of it is you haven't got enough width going forward because your fullbacks aren't going far enough forward because they're not confident about who's going to cover for them defensively. And you haven't got enough cover in defence. We had Bauer and Johnson, not the most mobile or quick centre-backs. Lewis apparently had a dead leg, so it's not a long-term injury. But unfortunately, if Lewis isn't around, or Harbottle isn't around, or there isn't someone quick enough in that back four to cover for a mistake made by one of his colleagues, we're going to get found out. And that's what happened to Wickham.
It's interesting that we're playing this this way now, because what I think has been an issue for us at the moment is we've tended to, in this, 3-5-2, try and get the ball wide, take your players on and put balls into the box. And we're absolutely, one, our crossing hasn't been that great. And secondly, we never usually have anyone tall enough or big enough to win those challenges when we're going forwards. So now it looks like we're playing narrower with the idea of putting a ball through the middle that someone like Max Stevens or Hackford or Sass could get onto. So they're running onto goal rather than trying to get a ball wide and cross it in. So it feels like we're trying to change tactics and how we actually score our goals. But that comes at a cost defensively, is what it looks like to me. And we are slightly stretched. And it does feel like maybe our midfield diamond is, as you say, Mark, narrow. So we're not going out wide. We're trying to keep things quite narrow, which means that then they can sort of like overlap if they're attacking us and get crosses in. It feels like it's interesting that we can now shift between these systems. So if our players are able to do that and they're able to shift at one, player 4-4-2, against one team and play a 3-5-2 against another side. If JJ is able to do that, to make that switch, and to make that switch within games as well, I think that's a great thing, rather than being stubborn. And do you think, Mark, when he brought those four people on, what he was then looking to do is change our system to go from 4-4-2 to 3-5-2?
That's exactly what he did. What happened when he brought the four on is he played Hackford up front, understandably, initially with Omar. He put Seddon into left-sided wing-back, and he put Assemway into right side. Sorry, Seddon into left-sided, not wing-back, left-sided centre-back, with Johnson and with Oggs, and Assemway right wing-back. And then he played
King.
The Great White Hope, Robert Jr. and King, as left wing-back. The difference was, and everybody's been raving about this, because he was a definite bright spark against Wickham. What Wickham did was say, fine, okay, we've got a 6'5" centre-back. We don't really mind how much possession you have for the last 20 minutes because we don't believe you can break us down. And unfortunately, they were right. So in King beat his man, I want to say 4 or 5 times. But there's a stat that I shared, which again, I think Reece Fletcher on X was the one that I saw it on. We had a number of crosses in the second half, but only 14%, three individual crosses, 14% of the crosses we put in second half actually got to our players, because for whatever reason we weren't making right runs, or as I say, they're all on the head of the 6'5" centre back, which was quite frustrating. So that's why we ended up with fewer touches in the opposition box. Well, that's why we ended up with less time spent in the opposition half, full stop. And obviously, in terms of shots on target, apparently we had one at Wickham, but if we did, I genuinely don't remember seeing it. Which again makes the other stats I saw in terms of goals scored absolutely peculiar, because this is before the Wickham game, so these will have changed a little bit. But before the Wickham game, we were joint second in terms of goals scored away from home, 17. Joint second only to Plymouth and Huddersfield. But we were second bottom, and now we are actually now second bottom on our own. 25 goals conceded away from home. Only Leighton Orient with 27 have conceded more. Flip side of that is at home, we have only scored 10 goals, which makes us bottom completely of the whole of League One. But we've only conceded 8. So that's why home games have been quite so exciting for us this season. Yeah, they're not great stats, are they?
No. It's really interesting. And obviously now we're in the January window. And I, to be honest with you, I can't see us making any purchases in Jan. I just, you know, I mean, it feels to me like we need a new midfielder. But also, can I just put this out there? Because Noel and I were discussing this. You know, always the big complaint about us is our budget. Okay. And let's go back, because it's our favourite topic. Let's go back to the 80s, where again, our budget was small, really comparatively small, even at that point, going through against sides around us. So Bassett made a decision which changed the template, gave us what people call a Wimbledon, you know, where we went long. We had fast people on the wings. We had, you know, thugs at the centre back. We had hard people in the middle, and we had someone, a big lump up front, you know, physical presence up front, who would head a ball on, knock it on, and we'd have someone who would run off and score. And that was it. And we got these players in because technically they were not the most gifted players, but what they gave every single week was passion. And they gave everything for the badge. And I'm not saying that our players aren't doing that, but what they're not is that. They're not that presence. They haven't got that physicality to them.
I know, I agree with that. I think we are losing some physicality. I think the problem with that is that that kind of approach would probably only work now League Two conference and below. You know, I mean, there was a thing, there's a whole thing going around about Robbie Earl or something, and but he talked about the fact that you watch, even just watching people play football now compared to what it was like then, it's like a different sport in terms of the athleticism, in terms of their approach to the game, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So I think I agree with what you're, I think we have to work within the constraints of the budget, we have to do things. I just don't necessarily think that type of tactic would hold up at the level that we're at. What I would like to see, though, is like Brown not falling over, you know, stuff like that, and just like trying to win fouls. I, obviously, Bugle's goal was actually allowed, like the referee was a joke at that game, so whatever.
Adam, you need to see it. You need to see it. There's a real angle on it where
I saw it. I was sat behind you. I saw it.
It gives him a shove.
I wish you were right, Adam, but unfortunately.
Yeah.
The thing I was going to ask you, actually, so Mark, I mean, I'm always moaning about getting subs on earlier. With 65th minute is pretty early for subs, so that's quite good. But changing four players at the same time, that's pretty rare, isn't it?
It is, definitely. One stat I would love to see, though, is when we actually made the first sort of substitution in the game. Because I do not genuinely believe it didn't happen at Wickham. It definitely didn't happen against Exeter. I'm not sure about Stevenage either. But it just seems to be so reactive. I mean, look, my kids are 18. My younger ones are 18 now. But even they remember the O'Neill Ardley days. And without having you on your shoulder there, they're like, why are we waiting? Why are we doing the whole on the hour mark, you know?
Yeah, so for that game, all the first set of subs came on in the 65th. And then the next is Orsi on in the 80th.
You're talking about Wickham? Yeah.
And so what
but as I say, generally speaking, I'd like to go back through, and I probably have got the time right now, actually. so maybe I will do that before next week's episode. Is actually go back through and say, okay, from the very first game of the season, Luton away, where we lost 1-0, but we were quite cheered by that because we'd done pretty well. Have we actually made a substitution, whoever it was, first in any individual game?
Oh, right, yeah, I don't know. You probably
because if not, then no, we're not the ones that are actually trying to change the dial, so to speak.
I don't think we have, you know. It'd be great to, yeah, definitely check that out, Mark. But I feel like we haven't. I feel we've always made subs after the other team. Always.
Well, that's interesting. I saw one recently, must have been Exeter, where we'd made a sub and they made one almost immediately. It was sort of like reacting to our...
Okay.
2 hour sub. So it would be an interesting thing, Mark, to look back on. Don't do it now, but it'll be an interesting thing to look back on. But Nye, we were talking about this change of tactic. And maybe I'm right, maybe I'm too old school, but it feels to me like if we want to stretch our budget, the way we can do that is by getting, you know, physically strong, hungry players that will win a ball. Not technically not that great, you know, but they can actually go and win a ball and, you know, challenge. Yeah, we get a lot of free kicks and we get a lot of people who don't like us, but what do you think?
I found the answer, by the way, to the question.
Yeah,
that is exactly what we were talking about. It's right, it's the big lump up front, right? Because what we have got is, when you look at Omar when he comes on, is there are times where he's doing that clever touch or that flick on to that person that runs through. So, right, you know, that's where you've got your Hatford, your Stevens and all the rest of it. They play off that big bloke. Now, the problem is that, to be honest, in my opinion, Omar's pretty wasted as being that target person, because he's all right at it, but it's better things for Omar to be doing. And we actually need that big bloke. So we were talking about, why has my brain gone dead? I like Akin Benoit, but there was somebody else as well that we had before that.
Tom Elliott.
We were talking about.
Stu Evans.
Right.
yeah,
Tom Elliott and Akin Benoit were the kind of two people that we were thinking, right, those are the sort of players that we need that are going to cause havoc and win everything, that we need up front to be able to flick it on. That's what's missing, because there isn't that. That's almost like it could be a plan A, but it's certainly, we need to have that as an option that we don't have at the moment.
But maybe we can get someone on loan.
We've been found out.
Yeah, but Adam, here's the thing. If you ask most Wimbledon fans what position you need, they're not going to say you need a striker, because we've got Stevens, Bugle, Sass, Brown is now playing up there. Foyer when he comes back, and there's someone else whose name I've forgotten. So it's six strikers, and I could even be missing people. That's six strikers. So you're going to say what we need, and I think we've all said this, is that four that we've always that we had. You know, in the Ardley era, we had that four, didn't we? I think we always go that Lyle Taylor, Aziz, Elliot, and Akinfenwa. That was, I would say, our perfect four in the last few seasons, and we don't have that replicated now. So what we need is, you know, like you need two, you know, stronger players, because generally speaking, you know, it's not we don't have the money to have, you know, really technically gifted players. But we just need to have a couple of them. Maybe we need to shed some players up front and get those some other people in. We also need a really good strong holding midfielder.
We do need a holding midfielder. That's for sure. That is definitely
Yeah. Sorry, Mark.
I think actually we need. I'm not so much about holding. Maybe a holding midfielder. It's like the person who can win the ball.
Well, yeah, I'd rather have someone like Akinfenwa where people bounce off him rather than at the moment
The other player that I'd look back to, I'm obviously Matt who was talking about Vinny, but it's a Bowman, you know, that sort of person who's going to run around, loads of energy in the middle of the park, who's going to just cause havoc and win the ball. And wins the ball, does a simple pass to, you know, Reeves, who can spread the ball.
But they might exist in the lower leagues, and we could get one on loan, or you know, maybe, or just buy someone cheap who's in the lower league who can just kind of do that stuff. Maybe.
I think what is interesting for me is two things. Number one, people were clamoring a few weeks ago for that player, that ball winning, that creative midfield player to be Pro Jennings, who was obviously already in our group, so to speak. Wouldn't have to acquire him. Then I thought it was quite interesting that not only did we announce that we had extended his loan at Sutton to the end of the season, which actually in the long run is almost certainly a better idea overall than a short-term quick fix, throw a kid in and find that he actually gets potentially catcalls from the crowd if things don't go well for him. But also they released, and this is a new feature, so well played to whoever did this particular feature. It's a little sort of on the road video blog thing with Craig Cope and Andy Thorne, who'd gone to see Jennings play at Sutton in a relatively low-key game against Southampton under-21s. It's like a 6-7 minute feature, and they talked to Jennings and they talked to officials at Sutton, and they showed what he's doing and how he's doing things and so on. But they also show the fact he's got a run of games, getting that run of games is important and significant for him. But also, I imagine that one of the reasons that Cope and Thorne would have gone there would be to say, okay, how's he getting on? And actually, we know what we need in midfield, even if it's someone to be able to rest and interchange with Alistair Smith and Jake Reeves. Is that player Jennings? Is he up to that level yet? And presumably, they've made the call that he isn't yet, which isn't a slight on him. That means that he's not quite there in his development. Just like, you know, Jack Curry a few years back was left on loan at Eastbourne Borough, I believe, in the Conference South all of the season, came right back into the squad in pre-season and made his debut on the opening day against Gillingham, scored in his debut with the header at the far post, and then went on to greater things, obviously. Who knows what Jennings might do next season? Obviously, we want to be in League One for him to be able to thrive there. But if they've made that call, then they need to bring in someone who is much more oven ready, so to speak. Whether it's Aloni from a higher division or somebody who is not getting in the Charlton team, not getting in, I don't know, even the Reading team, for example. And obviously, it's fascinating when you go to certain games behind the scenes, you hear a few things. And one of the things that people were saying, and it was corroborated by three or four different sources, in terms of resources, Wickham's budget apparently is £6.5 million higher than ours. Not £6.5 million, but £6.5 million higher than ours, which makes it about 400% of ours, as far as I understand. Which means that if anyone's on loan or looking to take a, I don't know, Arsenal youngster or Chelsea youngster or that type of level that we could do with, Fulham youngster even, who are obviously down the road. How much of their wages can we afford to pay? How much of their wages can someone like Wickham afford to pay? Considerably more. We don't need to cry over that. We just need to be realistic about what we can afford and what level we can bring people in on.
Yeah, I mean, and it's so it's great, isn't it, that we've got, you know, potentially a couple of youth products which we've not had this, you know, really. Oxy's obviously one, but if we can get Nkeng and Jennings into our first team squad starting more regularly, if that can happen from next year, I think that's going to be a huge boost to us. But yeah, I mean, but like I say, I mean, I don't think we're going to change our style of play. I don't think we're going to be a situation where, you know, we go back to that circa 1980s Wimbledon lineup, which one of the only reasons I talk about that working is just because you'll find that a lot of those players are going to be cheaper and hungry, like they've got something to prove. So if you're looking, you know, lower down the leagues or people who have been, you know, let go for what reason or another, I think that's always what we were. We were always sort of like that, sort of misfits that managed to work together. But I don't think that is what, you know, what our management would want to do.
Yeah. So the other thing I was going to ask, because that was really weird, was that I was talking to someone on Friday, it must have been Friday, after the game on the Thursday. And they were like, oh, so what game's on the weekend? I'm like, no, there won't be a game. We've like played like three games in a row. And then I was like, oh, hang on, there's a Sunday game against Wickham. What is going on with the fixture schedule? Why was it so close together? Because that's going to have a massive impact on us. Because again, we don't have the resources to have a completely different squad. Why were the fixtures
that's
like
always
that?
Been the case, though, Adam. It's always been the case at Christmas. Yeah, it's always been the case at this period. So that, and then you also think the Easter period, we have the Good Friday and the Monday game. Sure. You know, there's always parts in the calendar where you have those right next to each other. So, you know,
I don't remember having like a Thursday followed by a Sunday, but
so if you're playing 46 games a year, you're not going to play 46 games over 46 weeks. So there's going to have to be, you know, a lot of midweeks included.
I mean, the issue we've got obviously is that, you know, the sad thing is we're probably at full strength now, and yet we're lacking teeth. And that's the depressing thing. You know, who's out long-term injured? No one at the moment.
Sassu, because they're not talking about him. Anyone they don't talk about injury-wise, I suspect, is a long-term thing.
Yeah. Okay, so, you know, but the point is, it's like, we haven't been this healthy for a long time, yet we're not doing much. You know, that's my concern, and that's why I think this January transfer window is so important to get those two kind of players that we've talked about in, you know, that ball winner and that person who can, you know, do something special up front, as in terms of those knock-ons and stuff like that.
I genuinely don't think we would go for an attacker. Because like I said,
we need to move some out, right?
Yeah, you'd have to move people out to do that. But
and the question is, who do you move out? Because I mean, you know, I know we laugh and joke about the practicality and the impact that Aussie's made so far. But actually, really, it's only Aussie and probably Harbottle. And I have no idea what the situation is with Harbottle, why he just reappeared on the bench last weekend when Lewis was injured and hasn't been even in the squad for like 2 months before that. But anyway, Harbottle and Aussie are probably your only sort of two outliers, so to speak. You know, we haven't got a bomb squad like, you know, your Chelsea's and your other Premier League clubs have got in terms of players who are not being included and for whatever reason don't fit the manager's gameplay.
I mean, I'm assuming that it will be towards the end of the window that possibly Foyo can go back on loan again, maybe back to Sutton.
He can't go anywhere until the 26th.
Yeah, so right at the end of January. And then, that conversation might have happened. Yeah, those conversations might have happened already. So you can imagine Foyo goes out, you know. Does I mean, like, you know, here's a truth. You mean, like, he's been great, but does Sass go out? You know, we got Hatford. Does Sass to Sasko out on their on loan somewhere
if,
in league.
Not if he can't stay fit for more than 2 minutes.
Yeah,
you know, Sasu came back from injury, which is a month or so out after he scored those four against Cardiff. He finally got a chance playing up front as a sub for about 10 minutes, and he was shifted again to the right. He started the next game, which I think was Exeter off the top of my head, up front, and he got injured in a block tackle, hobbled off after about 25 minutes, and no one's seen him since.
And even if you brought it right down to sort of like four strikers, I'm talking Brown and Bugle, you know, and then Stevens and Hackford, I think, you know, I just can't see us bringing another forward in. I really can't, because someone else would have to go, or it would have to be a completely different change of tactics. It's going to be really difficult. The only thing I can see that we need desperately, is another centre midfielder, someone who can break play up.
No, that makes total sense to me. So come on, Mark, you found out the stats about the subbing. Apparently,
I did find out the stat about the subbing. It's relatively easy to do. You just start at the beginning of the season and go through game by game. Yeah. And the answer is Reading on the 16th of August, which is what, our third game? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Fourth game. Reading on the 16th of August, day before my birthday, we brought Hippolyte on as a sub for Antoine Hackford in the 58th minute. Reading made their first substitution in the 66th minute. They made three subs in the 66th minute. We were already winning. Hippolyte then set up Brown to score in the 70th, and we won the game 2-1. That's the first game. And again, I haven't gone any further, but I suspect if you go through, that may be an outlier. In other words, it may well be a case that we didn't do that. That hasn't happened in any other game, or certainly very, very many other games that I remember.
I'm pretty sure that substitution made quite an impact, because I was there. And I think I have a vague recollection that it might have actually been a good thing to put a sub on first.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think that's the thing. It's our subs are primarily reactionary
or injury related. So obviously Sasu coming off the other day would have been the early sub. I can see Harbottle came on against Cardiff because Lewis was injured relatively early on. But other than that, no.
Yeah,
just doesn't happen.
Just talking very briefly back on the transfers again. So obviously we've kind of identified what we think would be a good, you know, fit. But do we have a chance of losing anyone? Do you think there's anyone that potentially could be?
Well,
the only thing I thought would be because I think it always happens when he's bigged up. Like Brown was bigged up.
I don't have the stats to hand, but somebody came out with a long, long list. I think it was about 17 players, 17 or 18, who are apparently allegedly out of contract at the end of the season.
Yeah, I see that.
Six or seven of those are, you know, your Riley Horans and your players who are out on loan for the rest of the season in non-league. Yeah. But at least 10 of those I'd want to keep. And you've got people like Brown and Seddon, for example, who I believe only signed one-year deals anyway.
So, I thought Brown signed a two-year deal. I was convinced he signed a two-year deal in the summer, but Seddon was definitely one. I know that much.
And the point is there, if they are only under contract for another...
Yeah.
Not the Top 20 podcast, also a website, and there's an interview on there, quite an interesting one, done by George Ellick, I think, who's an Oxford United fan, but he did it with the director of football at Cambridge United, and... None of that's relevant for us, but what is relevant is this guy, Mark Bonner, who used to be the manager at Cambridge, now the director of football. He was honestly talking about the fact that some players who are out of contract in the summer will come to the manager or the director of football at whatever club it is and ask, look, you know, what opportunities... Ask in January, i.e. now, what opportunities are there for me? You know, am I going to get a new contract? What kind of contract are you going to offer me? Or actually, should I get my agent looking around already? So, I don't know. I mean, obviously, Brown would not want to be... Well, no player would, but certainly Brown, who's played in the Championship, having now shown for the last year or so that he is fit and he can maintain a place in a League One team, is he still going to be looking upwards? He scored a number of goals for us, so he's probably, even though he's only got a few months left on a contract, if he has only got one year deal...
I'm sure it's 2 years. I'm sure it was a two-year deal.
Well, if so, then he's a more sellable asset. I don't want to sell him by any means, but he could be.
That's
Yeah,
the
you're
thing, though.
right.
When
You're
you're
right.
in
I've
this
seen it here.
situation,
He did sign it, so I've
when
just
you're in
found
this
it online.
situation, is that, what do you go right? That these are players that we kind of just accept losing at the end of this season, or do you go right? Well, let's try and cash in on some of them. Seddon would be the classic example here, right? So we would like Seddon to sign a new contract, but if we've only got 6 months left of Seddon, what do we do?
Well, yeah. I mean,
That's
well, the hope.
the issue. I think both Mark and I don't know whether Mark would have done. I certainly did when I was on the board. I remember having these conversations. Like, what are we going to do? Because ultimately they're going to want to walk away. They want to leave the club, but how do you do that? And that's really
Niall's
difficult.
board were rather more hands-on than in that
Yeah, I
regard
was going to
related
say,
to those than ours
I'm
was.
kind of hoping that the Don's Trust board is not getting involved in the football
No, no.
operation stuff,
The
please.
only thing I can tell you is for example, the Don's Trust board were informed because I was on there when Ali was when a transfer deal was in place for Ali, and we were told the level of wages that he would be earning in comparison to the level of wages he had with us, and it was an absolute no-brainer. By the way, Adam's found it, and I've just found it as well. Matt is completely correct. Brown signed a 2-year deal in June 2025. So he's with us for another year and a half, which again, sadly, could make him a potential sellable
I mean,
asset.
that's it. So if you can get him up fit, so it could be Jan, it could be the summer. But if we can get something for him, that would be brilliant. I mean, and to do that, we need to stay up, I think.
Of course.
And which brings me to another point. I mean, so it's so tight in League One at the moment. But it feels like 50 is the minimum points that we need to get. So what will that is another
I've got a nice stat for you there.
19 points. Yeah, what have you got, Mark?
Well, I think it's another 6 wins at least minimum, which would be 18 points and a few draws. Again, this is just a random website on X, but PPG Profit appears to do different analysis of all four divisions, including Premier League, club by club, literally game by game. And as a result of that, he's now, because we've played half the games, right? He's now prophesying. He's not a prophet, obviously. He's just a bloke with some stats. But he's prophesying based on current points per game and momentum where the individual leagues will turn out. So good news for Arsenal fans is he thinks Arsenal are going to win the league by about 6 or 7 points. But in League One, which is the only reality we're interested in, he's looking at and forecasting Cardiff to win the division by 10 points, with Lincoln second. Playoffs being Bradford, Bolton, Stevenage, and Stockport, with Huddersfield just missing out. The relegated teams he's looking at are Port Vale, Doncaster, Rotherham, and Burton Albion on 52 points.
Whoa.
And this is after Rotherham 43, Doncaster 41, Port Vale 34. This is after the Wickham game. He has us down on 56 points, finishing 17th, ahead of Blackpool, Northampton, and Leyton Orient. And the current league table is relatively similar to that, actually.
Yeah. Well,
And I
yeah.
think, to be honest, we'd be quite happy with that, wouldn't we?
Oh, mate, come on.
I
At the start
would
of the
be.
season,
What? Staying in
we'd be
the
totally, yeah. Yeah.
league? Come
We, I
on,
mean,
that's all
I,
we want.
yeah, I mean, this, yeah, stay in the league is, I think, is the big thing. And
That
then
is it.
we've got to then find a way of stabilizing, which I think is going to be the big trick. But hopefully, stay in this league is the big thing.
What,
Okay.
stay in this league to hold out for the blooming football regulator?
Yeah.
Now I've got a brilliant paper that's coming out on that, starting to circulate. Very exciting.
There you
But
are. There you are. So it's all the football regulator's in play. Yep. And are they going to start getting teeth soon and we can start hearing things from them? Because at the moment it just feels like
you will start seeing clubs that have rogue owners being held to account by the regulator. That's what's going to happen. From my perspective, very quickly, just because Adam mentioned it, we're doing two big significant fair game hat on, two big significant bits of work on owners and directors and on financial flow, both of which I think will kick up quite a bit of a fuss and probably get the regulator moving their asses, because on the owners and directors stuff, which is really fascinating, you know, we've looked at all the directors in top five divisions, and we're starting to see some dodgy people and dodgy shenanigans going on. So that should be quite interesting. And on the financial flow, we're working with clubs now on doing the final little bits of dotting I's and crossing T's on what that looks like and what our proposal is. And our hope is to get buy-in from some of the big players in football, including some of the leagues. And if we can get that, then that will be a big, significant change for us as a club.
Well, let's hope that we should have more of a catch up on fair game and the regulator shortly. But I think we've got some, you know, as usual, as you know, you heard the end of year review. We have guests, so you know, who knows what we'll be doing next week. I just let me finish off with this because I know this is going to take me a few attempts to finish. But there's, you know, bits and bobs, isn't there, that coming out from the club. Adam, I know you're going to be excited. There was the club shop sale. Have you bought anything there?
Not yet, but I am looking, unfortunately.
Yeah.
There are some decent 10 quid t-shirts, so get in there. So,
I mean, I've got that cricket jumper, you know, the blue cricket jumper.
I know. So that is the one I sent to the family and said, hey, you see the cricket jumper? And my wife was like, that one looks all right. So I was tempted, yeah. That's on my list.
20 quid, that's all right.
I know, it's cheap, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not bad. And then obviously we got the EFL trophy game next week, which Mark, I think you're going to, is that right? Because you're a big fan of the EFL trophy, yeah?
No, I'm not.
I think it's got some importance. It's got some importance, A, because there's money attached to it.
Cash.
And B, we owe it to the rest of football to knock out West Ham's under 21 squad.
100%. And West Ham's full squad aren't doing amazing, and they're playing tonight on their massive 6-pointer, as we recalled this on Tuesday night. Surely the biggest thing about that one squad can't be great.
The biggest thing about that trophy game is it clashes with when we normally record the podcast, which is causing us our bigger headache.
Yeah, I think you're fine. We won't mind.
I think you're fine. We've got a really quite high-quality historical guest lined up for next week, Joe.
Yeah. Feed us. We're not going to give Teddy who, but it's exciting. And then I guess final, let's end on this, Adam. Come on, mate. The We Are Wimbledon Fund has handed over a cheque for...
$22,000. It's probably even gone up more. Oh, it's great. And the cool thing about it, right, was we got to go down to the pitch side. So we got onto the pitch to meet Craig Cope and stand there, and they took us in the tunnel. I mean, I haven't done the tour. So I'm saying
should do the tour. The tour's very
good. I know, I need to do the tour. But it was so exciting. All of us were like...
Was that Boxing Day?
So excited.
No, was that the next again?
Yeah. It was so... Everyone... But the funny thing is, I thought I was the most excited, but everyone was like going mad. We were like, oh my word, we're just in the tunnel. Yeah, it was really good. It was great. Yeah, so... and thanks to Mark Jones for helping sort that out for us, and a bunch of other people wrote the cop, like... Doobs and others wrote the copy that's in the programme and that's on the website. I think it's coming in the programme, it's on the website already. And yeah, and Craig was great. He was like, thanks, you know, he was really appreciative, and it feels, you know, that it's going to do a good job. Of course, I made the silly joke, you can buy a player a sock now, you know, which he did laugh at, but I had to do it, you know. So yeah, it was great. I mean, and we are going to do more. This is the thing. Everyone was a bit like, oh, is that it? But actually, we want to do more. We're definitely thinking about doing another pub quiz. So as soon as we can get those things sorted, then keep an eye out, because there'll be loads of opportunities to kind of continue to fundraise for all kinds of good things. But at the moment, yeah, it's for the first team. So let's hope that we can use some of the money to get a loanee in.
The reality is £22,000 is obviously a lower sum than I think you guys were planning on and hoping for. It doesn't actually matter. What matters is that it's £22,000 as opposed to zero, because whatever resource we had, if we have to wheel and deal, which we'll have to wheel and deal, and completely confident in the ability of Thorne and Cope to scout people and Cope to be able to negotiate appropriately, knowing what resources we have to play with. But if we have X resources to play with plus £22,000, then we're in a better position than we were when that thing was founded. Yeah,
exactly. The thing I was thinking was like it could, you know, they could use it as like a golden handshake or whatever. It could be just an extra thing just to get someone over the line to say, look, here's a, you know, so yeah, I don't know how they can use the money.
My sense is that, you know, let's look back historically, you know, our prime guest has been on so many times now, John Green, you know, there's been contributions, isn't there, in the past. So that wouldn't surprise me if something like that came in again. So it could add to that. But it's anyhow, all fun and games. And I think, Adam, and to all the people behind the We Are Wimbledon Fun, fantastic, mate. It's great. I think whatever's been raised is more than we had before. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's fantastic, mate. Great work. And, you know, and amongst the fact that there was the club were asking for loads of different things at the time when you were doing that launch. So the fact that it's got to this level, I think, absolutely spot on, my friend. Right. I'm going to leave it there, everybody. Many thanks to my friend, Al Cooper, to Ali G, lookalike Adam Proctor, to Tormark Lewis, who now we can see all of him. My name's Matt Cooper.
Thank you, Matt.
We're the Sable Bumbles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold.